welcome to Atlanta. I have to say that I'm a Georgia native, so it's my job to make sure that you feel warmly welcomed by a Georgia peach for real. And I mean that. Because I graduated from Peach County High School, having been born at Peach County Hospital, so I really am Peach County in persona. So what I wanted to do this morning is a couple of things, and it's really hopefully to bridge with Scott's presentation, to follow the data that you heard from Roxanne, from a lot of the thinking that we know Dr. Wilton does, because I talk with him a bit, so that it sort of fits in. But really, I'm introducing you to Sister Love, because not everybody knows who we are and what we do, and the organization or the person that she is, because that's how we see her, in terms of the notion of integration, the notion of how we fit multiple pieces, just like in women's lives, together to come up with the best types of strategies we can in terms of prevention and intervention. So that whole notion of intervention is also a part of, even though we ain't had no language for it, is a part of what we do. And so and the other part is to really emphasize the role that community-based organizations, but also the communities themselves actually play into the work that we do and the models that we use to capture that. And then at the end, just to prove to you that we can do it. That's the other part, is about the capacity within the community to actually engage in some of these really tough questions and respond to them. Now, I will tell you that primarily outset, Sister Love is an HIV/AIDS and reproductive justice organization. But because of the way we approach HIV, predominantly from all of these different areas, including human rights advocacy, we have to look at the totality of women and girls' lives and the conditions in which they live. And so STDs have never not been a part of the work we've done as an HIV/AIDS organization from the beginning, just as violence prevention, women's rights, sexual and reproductive health access have also been a major part of how we approach HIV prevention and care and service delivery. So just very quick, I'm going to go through these very sharply, but you know, yes, we say we're a small organization that does a lot of big things. And if you have a chance while you're in Atlanta, that's our lovely location in the West End over in Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, which is a women of color community center, which is the first of its kind in Atlanta. Two major areas of work that we do, primarily around women-centered HIV and reproductive health services, including prevention education. We have that whole nice little resume and inventory of Debbies, like a whole lot of people do. Those that are particularly focused on African American women and adolescents. We just launched our very own HIV testing and counseling center with a feminist based approach to women's services. Well, I thought that was for me. So, part of our strategic plan to make sure we incorporate the feminist theory into the discourse around HIV and reproductive health. So I'm getting there. Training, advocacy, and of course we are directly involved in a large part of prevention research going forward. And in community integration, that's just really our area, what we call our bridge leadership area, where we really work at the bridge of a whole lot of locations, places, and populations, as well as issues. And we also lead in that bridge because we see ourselves as the translators. We see ourselves as those who connect people who are living the experiences every day and living the challenges with the people who make the decisions, set the policy, and give out the money. So the idea is to do as much as we can, whether it's creating campus curriculum or whether it's, you know, providing support to positive women in leadership who are doing prevention work on the ground. Our job is to be the bridge for that, and that is all incorporated in these three program areas where our focus is on our health education, advocacy, and policy. So how do we get to this conversation about HBCUs? Well, first of all, with all bias due, I'm an HBCU alum. And because I graduated from a school here in Atlanta, it has been a real a privilege as well as a benefit to us to have that ongoing relationship on the campus, and I will say this all on record, despite the administration of the campuses themselves, because we have built long-standing relationships with students, student organizations, and faculty members, which have been most of our inroads. We have not always had the inroads at the administrative level, and you all know some of those challenges. But some of our other program activities are we specifically implement Voices, Voce Sister, but not in a routine way. We do the testing and counseling, and I want to just point out the RISE intervention. Quinn Gentry, who was at Emory and was CDC for a while, and we currently work together on integrating two interventions, our Healthy Love Party and her intervention with the RISE, which is specifically looking at how we put together providers both in the violence against women field and providers in HIV education. And then the other services, linkage to care. So all of that comes up under our prevention program, but what's most important is these top two interventions that we have bridged. So the Healthy Love Party is where I'm at. We like that because the Healthy Love Party is a community-based, homegrown, developed intervention that's been implemented over the last 20 years. And just a little bit of the description about the Healthy Love Party, it delivers HIV and STD prevention information very interactively in a place where women's rights and women's dignity is fully respected. So it's non-judgmental, both within the participants as well as from who we God to facilitate. We're proud that we eroticize safer sex. It's important to make sure that we're not coming from a negative, that we're not coming from a basis where sex is supposed to be carried as a burden, much as opposed to being a part of our humanity and our human dignity. And so for women, having a space where we validate their own sexuality and the right to have it safe has been very important for us in developing this intervention. So we create that safe space. We also intentionally work with existing groups. So that's why the campus environment is so helpful for us, because while we're targeting dormitories, we're targeting sororities and on-campus organizations and groups where folks are all, we have groups of young women who all go to the same church when they go off campus together, or who may work together and have a working collection that way. Study groups we've even worked specifically with. The idea is working within circles of familiar so that the conversation has an echo once the workshop is done, because we do it in a one-shot deal. And we make house calls, sort of like Tupperware, only we call it rubberware. So. We delivered, and I'm just wanting to go briefly over the Healthy Love Party, because a part of our challenge in implementing the party over these last several years is that once the locking in of evidence-based interventions became the word of the day, we were at a very much disadvantage, because we had an intervention that we knew anecdotally worked, that we had large popularity and commitment at community level, but we couldn't get any funding for it because we weren't on that small list of evidence-based interventions that we had options for. And I'll get to an option that we took that was really special for us in terms of the Healthy Love Party. So what we did was, through an innovation and evaluating homegrown interventions pilot study that the CDC funded between 04 and 08, we actually had the opportunity to do a rigorous evaluation study of the Healthy Love Party so that we could prove a homegrown intervention as an evidence-based model. So we know that we are now theoretically based, that we have modules that fit within all of the other core components of all of the other interventions, and that we do it in such a way where we set the tone, share the facts around HIV and STDs, and then do skills building under the safer sex component. So when we did the study, this is just some of the backdrop to that, we actually ended up with about 313 women into two groups. It was a group-level randomized controlled trial that looked at the Healthy Love Party versus a very staid HIV 101 stand before you, not even with slides, presentation. And everything else was similar between the two workshops. I won't stick on each one of these because this has just recently been published in AIDS and Behavior, and you should read the whole article. that's our excitement. So what's important about what we were able to find out from this particular study, which, by the way, only focused on African-American women, and that's a key point when I get to the intervention portion of this, but that what we did find is that the Healthy Love Party does show at 3 and 6 months in different stages increased use in condom during vaginal sex with all male partners and primary partners, condom use at last sex with any male partner, and of course a willingness to be tested and screened for HIV and STDs at the 6 month follow-up, which is really significant because it's so far out from the intervention. So how do we get Healthy Love into the community in a way that does fit within the evidence-based model? Well, when we were looking at where we could actually sort of integrate, we hadn't even gotten to the conversation around adaptations and modifications, because that wasn't even factored in at the beginning, am I right? So what we had to look for was somewhere where we could fit, but that we had some flexibility to move. Sister didn't allow for that for us. Voices didn't allow for that for us, because first of all, it hadn't been evaluated out in community. It had only been in clinical settings. When we looked at another intervention under the community identification process with Community Promise, which is peers reaching out, modeling intervention strategies, was almost perfect for us because it meant that we had an opportunity to actually go into community, assess community, work with community on developing the models in terms of peer representation and peer advocacy, but then we also had to have some sort of education and outreach component put into that, right? So that education and outreach component actually became the Healthy Love Party. So what we did was we adapted Community Promise to first just a minor adaptation to make sure that to keep peers involved in the role modeling stories and in expressing their peer advocacy, that we provided incentives, which were provided in the studies, but not in the implementation. Y'all know what I'm talking about. So we had to get extra funding to make that happen. But more importantly, when it came down to actually doing the condom demonstrations, the risk reduction and partner negotiation skills building, we used the Healthy Love Party model itself to do just all of that, which means that beyond Community Promise models that basically do those skills demonstrations, we actually had a whole new intervention that came wrapped up, sort of like the yolk and an egg, that came wrapped up in the larger intervention of Community Promise. Now, I had a breakdown, just so you know, this is my little disclaimer, in the last couple of days where I've been going through, I can't find my flash drive syndrome. And so there was a study that was conducted by, we work closely with Morehouse College and the CDC and the MHOTEP program, where we usually have Master Public Health interested students working with us every summer, and every summer we have a really fabulous research project for them. About 4 years ago, one of our students looked specifically at the fusion of Healthy Love and Community Promise and some of its outcomes. Of course, but that presentation was that her paper and her PowerPoint are all on my what? Flash drive. So what we do know out of that is that with the integration of the Healthy Love Party and with the Community Promise and looking at some of the same questions we have been looking at in terms of just evaluating the Healthy Love Party and its evaluation, is that, and first of all, this particular group was more inclined to just be the HBCU population, so it was really great because we had about 60% between 13 and 19 years of out of about 600 respondents to a 30-day behavior questionnaire. About 31% were 20 to 24 and 25 and upward, the smaller group of that. The biggest thing that came out of that, we had a summary of a few findings. For example, people actually were engaged in unprotected heterosexual sex and at significant rates that were not previously reported on these campuses. That was what was important. Unprotected male-to-male sexual contact, recreational drug use, and unprotected sex with partners of unknown status. But what we learned, this was 2006, so for us, for the first time, was we had empirical data that showed the disconnect between risk perception and risk behaviors, and it was as stark as you could possibly get it in terms of what the students understood post-workshop and what they reported 30 days later in terms of the actual behaviors they had been engaged in. And so this is why it became important for us to recognize that with our opportunity to partner with CDC that we could now look at how we use the Healthy Love Party within the Community Promise model, right? But do it in such a way that adds new populations like men, couples, and young adults, because what we had evaluated had been focused on African-American women, and we want to know that if we enhance the Healthy Love Party itself, that we're going to be able to modify it and meet other populations' needs on college campuses. So we're just at the launching part of it. We're currently engaged in a new partnership with CDC, LTG Associates, and four HBCU campuses that also all have graduate programs in public health so that we can engage public health students in the actual interventions. And so we'll be working with Morehouse School of Medicine, Drew University, Meharry, and Howard University. And the other part that's really special is that we'll have an opportunity to also evaluate for greater emphasis on STDs, because the previous evaluation was primarily on HIV. So as I close, the future direction for us is this. One, that we're going to evaluate that enhanced Healthy Love Party for its integration. Two, that we're also looking within the next year to integrate STD screening with our HIV testing and counseling, because that has become a demand over and over from folks that we all actually help access care. And the biggest one for us is because we're one of those organizations that's very intentional about integrating service delivery with advocacy, is that, you know, we keep complaining about the fact that there's not a world of advocacy around STDs, right? We were joking on Sunday that there are no, you know, gonorrhea anonymouses, and, you know, there are no posters that I'm a chlamydia survivor, so, and there are no three-day walks for herpes. So, but that's critical. It's absolutely critical that you have, at every level, a voice for the voiceless saying these are critical needs, identifying the health disparities, making the connections with people's lived realities, and then delivering services, education and otherwise, where they need them, are very important. So our next point in our direction is to make sure that instead of complaining about not having a world of advocacy, that as Sister Love, it's a part of our duty to advance an advocacy agenda. So that's the other part that we'll be working on, is figuring out how to integrate the work that we do around HIV advocacy with STDs, and build on our current constituency to mobilize on policy around STDs.